How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is December 4th, 2012 here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have a lot of news to get into today. The Raw Report, as is the case every Monday. Show's still 3 hours. And,
You know what? I tell you,
there were rumors this weekend.
It's really weird, though, because, I mean, at first, when that whole thing went down, I thought it was okay, just, you know, Comcast. There was a glitch with Comcast, and I just passed it off as that's what it was, because that's what the WWE told me it was. But then, like, TV Guide had it, and, I mean, there was a commercial somewhere. Somebody said there was a commercial somewhere. So something's weird going on. Like, there's a communication issue going on somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't believe that they're, you know, I don't think there was, like, any plan to go to 2 hours or anything like that. I don't know what it is, but it's something strange. I mean, they should go, but that's a different discussion that we've already had. So, yeah.
Well, let's get into this Raw show. It was, there was some good stuff on this show. Still too long. And The Miz, oh my God. This guy.
Yeah. I think that the stuff they're doing with the Shield is really good. And some of the development of young talent and new talent is good. You know, I mean, there really are a lot of fresh faces. I just think that, like, you know, the three-hour format does no, you know, obviously, that's beating a dead horse, but it's just a reality every Monday night. You know, I mean, I talked to somebody who was, like, in the building, and his thing was, like, 9:30 Eastern time. So, you know, basically about halfway through Raw, he's like, the place just died. You know, it's just like they, you know, they just got tired. I think he said it was, like, this realization that they're only halfway through, and
it shouldn't be a chore to watch your TV show every Monday night.
It should not be a chore, and you should leave people wanting more, not people wanting to submit, you know, while the show is going on and say, please end. You know, I'm really surprised that, but again, it's beating a dead horse. I know the short-term finances of it and everything like that, but Vince, of all people, I mean, you would think that you know, and I mean, and he fought this, too. That was the thing. He fought this, and it's like, okay, you know, I could even go in there and go, okay, network, you know, you want to go for it. If you know, as long as it doesn't hurt our ratings, you know, and we'll know that if it's not working, you know, okay, well, we can give it a try. But when it's clearly hurting the ratings and, you know, I'm just really surprised that Vince isn't in there and just going like, look, we gave it a try. Because Vince, he's got to know, you know, that he's got to see that this is doing long-term damage. And I'm just kind of at a loss. I mean, these guys are, I mean, the one thing they should be really good at is protecting their product long-term. This isn't, you know, this isn't like a TV show. I mean, that's the one thing. A TV show is built for obsolescence, because TV shows, you know, if they go 5 years, they're considered successes. You know, a wrestling promotion, you know, is like a sport. It's closer to a sport in that sense, in the sense that it should be there forever. And, you know, burning it out just isn't a good idea. And I mean, they're not the only ones. I mean, we've seen that everywhere, and it's very seductive. And I know that, you know, there's that argument that look at all the football is on, but, you know, whatever. It's like, it's not the same thing. But whatever. I just, God, it's like every Monday night we get in the same discussion, and it's, I think everyone's getting bored with the discussion, but it's still there. And it was the first thing, you know, watching this and talking to people, you know, talking to someone in the building, just like, was just like, they said it was even worse in the building than you notice on television, you know, because the people really do start dying. So there you go.
It opened up with Kane and Daniel Bryan coming out. The Shield was in the upper deck, and Kane and Bryan challenged him to come down and fight. They didn't. Primetime Players came out instead, and we had a match. Primetime Players against Team Hell No. And story of the match is, as it's going on, the Shield slowly starts getting closer and closer to the ring. And, of course, they eventually get down there, and Bryan reversed a roll and pinned Darren Young, got the pin, and Shield immediately hit the ring. So they all destroyed Bryan. They gave him the triple power bomb. They destroyed Kane, laid out everybody, and that was the opening segment of the show. They are doing a very good job with Shield. It's almost like it's between the Shield and Brad Maddox and CM Punk and Paul Heyman in the lie detector and not getting an answer. It's almost like it's WWE's version of Aces and Eights, that mystery, but they're doing it much better at this point.
I wouldn't want to compare it to Aces. I mean, I see where you're coming from with Aces and Eights. I don't know that. Yeah, I guess that, you know, with all of those little twists and turns, you know, where Aces and Eights is going.
Mystery
and all.
Guys, who's with who, who's on whose side.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, the thing here is that they've, you know, that Kane and Daniel Bryan are now, I mean, they've been baby faces, but now they're like Daniel Bryan is weird because it's like he's been a heel and a baby face at the same time in the sense that he's been on the baby face side, but he still yells at the fans and gets mad at them when they do yes, yes, yes. And he still sort of does it, but, you know, like the whole Kane and Daniel Bryan thing, that now they're on the same page. It's like the storyline is that...
So if they're on the same page, then let's do the babyface turn and get people to care. I'm not saying they don't care.
They've been slotted on the babyface side.
Yeah, but they're still heels.
Kane's not really a heel at all now.
It's not really, but...
And Brian isn't so much. I mean, when he came out, I mean, like the thing I think that on SmackDown where Kane and Brian at the end were doing yes, yes, yes together, I think that was the turn.
Well, kind of, but Brian was back to doing no on this show.
I know. I mean,
it infuriates me when this happens because this is the easiest way to get people to stop caring about a character. When they're are they a heel? Are they a babyface? You don't know. You stop caring. Happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that they should just have him embrace the yes, yes, yes now that he's a babyface. And he's going to, because the thing is when they start getting behind him with the yes, 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 and it was a babyface thing, and they did the no to keep him from getting cheered, well, now there's no reason to keep him from getting cheered, and the people are, you know, the yes, yes, yes thing is super over, and he should just be embracing it. And, you know, at this point, I mean, if they're going against the Shield, which it looks like is what they're doing. I mean, from watching the show, I'm thinking that we're getting a tables match with those two and maybe Randy Orton, perhaps, against the three guys. I don't know if that's what it'll be, but it's something along those lines. I mean, they beat the primetime players, so that three-way for the tag team title, that was the plan a couple weeks ago. I mean, it's pretty clear to me that it doesn't look like that's the direction. I mean, Rey and Sin Cara haven't been even teaming up on television of late, so it looks like this is the way, you know, and they'll probably announce it next week or just that seems where they should go. I don't know that, again, it's hard to predict where they're going because they don't actually know sometimes.
So they and the Shield absolutely destroy these two guys who we presume are baby faces, but as noted, we're not 100% sure.
Oh, I am.
They destroy
them. They're baby faces now.
All right, but the point is they're being destroyed by the Shield. And they immediately cut backstage to John Cena and Sheamus, who are laughing and telling jokes. I don't know why that made me so angry. What are they doing? There's no monitor?
They don't care? It's not their fight, in the sense of they haven't done anything to Sheamus. But shouldn't they be concerned that these guys, shouldn't they say something about these guys? Sure. Especially since Cena, I mean, that was, you know, they were involved in Cena's business at the last pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So he should be. I mean, it's weird that they're destroying these guys, and nobody comes out to help. They never really said anything about Ryback. I guess what's the idea that he was injured last week? Was it even addressed? He just never showed up. And the people were expecting him like five different times or three. You know, they were expecting him here.
They should know he's a main eventer now.
At the end, he
shows up 30 minutes late and he only comes out for the main event.
Yeah.
We had AJ in the hallway and they mentioned she's coming out to do what she loves the most, wrestle. And that big feud with Tamina, we got it here. They had a match and... ends up with AJ schoolgirling her or something, and pinned her. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, they could keep it going though
by having the babyface win. I know that's what they do, but
well, I mean, the thing is Tamina beat her up the whole match,
and then lost.
Yeah, it was flip on a banana peel finish. So it's not like it. You know, I mean, they can keep going with it. I mean, because. you know, the whole thing is to, you know, for AJ to get over. I mean, Tamina's just there to enhance AJ. It's not like they're, you know, that's her role. So, I mean, that's what it was, is, you know, she beat her down, she beat the small baby face down, and then, you know, against all odds, she comes back and wins. So, you know.
So that's how we build up a rematch.
Well, you could.
Well, they will.
You know, it doesn't matter. It's a women's feud. You know what I mean? It's like it's not a main event feud. If it's a main event feud, it's
no, different. But they can try. That's always my.
It's just the you know, the idea is not to get Tamina over. The idea is to get AJ over. So it's okay. There's different rules for different spots, and the women rules for women are very different to me. You know, I mean, it's especially with AJ. You know, it's fine. I mean, if it was the main event. But they're doing this in the main event.
I was going to say, they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
We had Punk come out, and they did a segment. They plugged the WWE Encyclopedia, talked about how the book did not have enough about CM Punk, talked about how tomorrow he was going to surpass John Cena being the longest reigning WWE champion of the modern era, which he said was the past 25 years.
Not quite correct.
But I think it's 22 years is the real number.
No, I think it's 24.
It's 24?
Anyway. The long Hogan reign, which would be the last long one of this length, would be, let me see. It would be
1990.
Was it 1990? I thought it was the one that ended in 1988 when Andre beat him in Indianapolis.
You don't think he held the title for a year before he lost to Warrior? That would be WrestleMania.
It was Savage. It was Mania to Mania. So that's 1 year.
So yeah, it would be 88 then.
Yeah. So it'd be that one. So that was I think it was February. I could have the month wrong, but I'm not off by month. You know, because it was before Mania to set up the tournament. So I think it's February of 88, so it is almost 25 years. I mean, it's not 24 years and whatever. So whatever, it is pretty amazing that they have had the I'm sure that when he won the championship, this wasn't the plan to go long term, but I think that there was this feeling at some point, maybe, you know, probably when it probably really hit when Rock, you know, when they agreed and they cut the deal with Rock where you know, Rock would beat Punk for the title, and they did the stuff with Punk and Rock, remember that show when they did that first angle? I think from that point on, I think the idea probably was that Punk keeps the title until Royal Rumble, and they have stuck with it. I mean, unlike, you know, a year ago where, you know, they were changing the title on every single pay-per-view, so it is monumental from a booking standpoint that they were able to, months and months ago, have this idea, and they still, you know, as far as like the big picture, you know, they've had, you know, things here and there that have changed, and the Ryback elevation, you know, obviously wasn't planned, but in the end, the big story, you know, which was the long title reign and going to Rock, seems to still be on the books.
So Punk is ranting about how, without him, nobody would look forward to these dismal three-hour Monday Night Raws.
I can't believe he said that.
I can.
Really?
He said a lot of things on this show that...
I mean, I just would never say... I mean, if it wasn't true, I would... You know, he's a heel and he can say it if it's not true, but it hits too close to home.
Well, that was the entire... That was the first half of the lie detector segment talking about how Miz sucked.
Yeah, I thought that was amusing, though. But yeah, you're right.
It's because he was speaking the truth after this show. Miz came out and, oh my God, he was like so ridiculously annoying as a babyface that I thought he's desperately trying to turn CM Punk babyface. Just was so annoying. And long story short, they signed a lie detector test for the main event where Punk would have to tell the truth about The Shield and Brad Maddox. And if it turns out that he was lying, it was going to be Ryback versus Paul Heyman on Raw next week. We had Cena and Sheamus against Dolph in the Big Show. They had a good match with what would, on a normal show or a pay-per-view be an awesome finish, but given who got pinned, I'm flabbergasted.
Well, I think that, I mean, I guess time will tell where this is going.
I think Cena's losing at the pay-per-view, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah, I think that, so
it's ridiculous.
And that's how they do it. If Cena's going to lose, he's going to dominate the build. If Cena's going to lose. Now, because they're super high on Ziggler right now. I mean, it's not like, this isn't one of those things where like, you know, we all think that Ziggler's ready and they're just, you know, like there's people in the back that are just going like, oh, he's missing this, he's missing that, and they're coming up with the excuses. I mean, Ziggler and Barrett are the two guys that I'm hearing that, like, they're, you know, they're really, really high on those two guys as being, you know, big-time main eventers. Cesaro to an extent, but Cesaro, the feeling is with Cesaro is that it's going to take a long time to get him over, but when he gets over, he's going to be really solid. So, you know, he can lose some along the way, win some along the way. It's a slow process, whereas I think they think Barrett's going to be quicker, and Ziggler's there right now. So I think that they're in their mentality is that, you know, they can beat him a lot since he's a heel, but he's going to get the big win. I mean, because if he loses the briefcase, I mean, I just, and it's possible they'll do that. I mean, I can see, like, with you know, Cena using the briefcase to cash it in at Mania or something, but it's, I don't know. I think the way that this whole thing's going, I will say this, though, as far as, I would not have done Cena pinning Ziggler. I think that I would have had Sheamus pinning Show, because that makes perfect sense to do, and just have Cena and Ziggler go, you know, like roll, you know, instead of doing the double finish, have them kind of just out of the picture and just let Sheamus get the pin on Show and be the focal point. But that's not what they chose to do. Because, again, I mean, he pinned him on TV last Monday. He gave him the attitude adjustment in the brawl and left him laying on SmackDown. He pins him again here. You know, and again, from talking to someone who was in the building, I mean, the big thing was is like, I mean, you said that Ziggler was not that over, and I'm going like, well, I can kind of get why, you know, in the sense that, you know, they don't give him the credibility to be a superstar, even though we all know that he's got it all right now. But I think maybe their feeling is that, you know, he's going to go in and beat John Cena in a ladder match, however that's going to go, and you know, and by doing that, it erases all those, you know, all of this buildup, because the pay-per-view match is the one that everyone remembers, and that's true. It is the one everyone remembers, and it does to an extent erase all this, even though more people will see all this.
Finish was the babyfaces getting the heels up at the same time for their finisher. Sheamus hit his gigantic white noise on the Big Show, and then Cena hit the AA at the same time on Ziggler, and Cena pinned Ziggler, so there you go. We had Damian Sandow coming out for another one of his segments with a fellow from the crowd. He was going to he's looking for a protege out of the audience, an apprentice. And so far, two strikes. He hasn't found this man yet. This time, he asked about H2O. Water, of course. And then, what was the second question he asked? I forget the second question. Oh, the first president.
Yeah.
And then he asked which poet wrote, "Much have I traveled in the land of gold." And John Keats, he said, was the answer. And this fellow didn't know the answer, so he got booted out of the ring. And I love these segments. I don't care. They're so wacky. And Damian Sandow is the perfect man to play this character.
I like Sandow a lot.
He's awesome.
He's really good.
And actually, this I felt was significantly better comedy than the actual match with Santino.
Santino match was, I mean, it was short. It was just what it was.
2.5 minutes, everybody.
Yeah, 2.5 minute match, and Sandow went over, and it was fine. You know, although it is when the show started, I do have this feeling that that's where you're going to start seeing the drop-off. I mean, we'll find out. I mean, who knows? You know, no one predicts ratings perfectly, but I have a feeling that this segment with Santino and Sandow may not do very well.
Doing a gimmick where Michael Cole said you can tout a question to Damian Sandow and attempt to stump him. Can't wait for those.
Yeah.
We had Dolph backstage long. Actually, Dolph is back there, and he's upset at Vicky. And he said he could beat Cena and begged her to sign the match at TLC. And she agreed to and was about to... they were about to embrace when they both realized, hold on a second, we can't do that. So he walked off. She went into her office, and there was Brad Maddox. That's something he wanted to talk about. Begged for a contract. And he had his camera people there from his YouTube show. And she said that, listen, I'll give you a match tonight. And if you win, you'll get a contract. And if not, you won't. And she said, I promise you. He wanted to know who the opponent was. And she just said, it's going to be great television. So, of course, everyone in the world thought the Great Khali. But it wasn't.
Thank God.
And that may be next week, Dave. It's coming.
Maybe yeah.
It's coming. Alberto Del Rio beat Sin Cara with the Armbreaker. They had a good long match. I think I've seen this match about four times in the last 2 months, but it's good.
Yeah.
It's right home.
I think that it felt like, I mean, this was something that, again, because I think the long show hurt this one. But I mean, you know, Del Rio is really good at working with Sin Cara. I think that Del Rio is like Sans program right now. It's like he's kind of, you know, it's like he's a star. They push him as a star and this and that. He needs to get in a program.
I think somebody, one of the problems might be that somebody actually sent me these stats. How many matches he had with Randy Orton over about the last 6 months. And I can't remember how many it was, but he lost every single solitary one except for one. And
that's what they do with heels.
Well, not to that degree.
Yeah, I know. Usually it's even Steven.
That's a pretty one-sided whooping right there.
You know, I mean, with Randy Orton, they've been doing a lot of even Steven too. I mean, he's been beaten by, you know, Barrett, and, you know, I mean, Barrett may go beat him tomorrow for all we know. I hope he does. Although, maybe. You know what, though? Orton will probably win that one because I think Barrett's up. It's won two of the last three.
We had Vince and Vicky in the ring for their meeting. And to make a long story short, he talked her into a new match at TLC. It is John Cena versus Dolph Ziggler. However, it is not a singles match. It is not what she suggested first, a no DQ match. He talked her into putting together a ladder match where... Hanging above the ring is going to be the Money in the Bank briefcase. If John Cena gets it, of course, he's the new Money in the Bank winner, I guess. And those are the stipulations. So, as you noted, could always do the deal where Cena wins and takes the briefcase to challenge Rock at WrestleMania.
I would not. I could see them doing it. I just wouldn't recommend it.
It could always be rehab by putting the title on Dolph. Soon thereafter.
Just cleanly win the title at some point.
Yeah.
Like quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Sheamus.
And yeah.
I mean, he's due, considering if you chart out all the Sheamus-Dolph Ziggler matches, you're going to get pretty much as one-sided as that Orton-Del Rio feud.
It's probably true, yeah. And they also announced the lie detector stipulation where it'll be Paul Heyman versus Ryback next week if Punk fails the test. So, Brad Maddox and Randy Orton, that was the mystery opponent, Randy Orton. He beat Maddox with an RKO in like 50 seconds, maybe.
Minute 13.
Minute 13, that was close.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, just, yeah.
Nothing to say.
We'll have to wait and see what's going on with Brad Maddox.
He'll be back.
I presume that he will.
And then the Shield beat up Orton afterwards and gave him the triple team powerbomb as well. So no one is safe.
Yeah. They I mean, when they come out, the crowd does react pretty big. I mean, they got a lot of heat. I mean, this is a good – it's good. I mean, that's one thing that I think – I mean, that was the high, I think they were the highlight of the show.
Yeah. We had a really long segment that opened up with Paul Heyman and Vicky Guerrero – having, like, the longest stare-down ever. And long story short, Heyman didn't seem to believe that... well, I don't know what he believed, but he smirked at Vicky after she chewed him out, I guess to indicate that you're not going to get the privilege of seeing Ryback kill me next week. And then John Cena came in all happy-go-lucky and thanked Vicky for the match at the pay-per-view. And she was, of course, very upset about this. And somewhere in here, Ziggler as well came in. And I don't think he broke up with Vicky, but that certainly was the direction they appeared to be heading. He's very upset about what happened. She said, "What the hell was I supposed to do about it?" And that was that. Truth
he,
and
he said that. What did he say?
You're becoming just like AJ.
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. And Vicky was warning Cena about AJ, and that was interesting there. And then what else? Cena made a remark about the five moves of Doom.
He does it all the time. I don't know why.
He does it sometimes. I don't know why, though.
Yeah. We had Truth and Kofi against Wade and Antonio Cesaro.
Well, actually, it was turned into a four-way.
That's right. Good match. Good finish.
A little rough in some spots.
Everybody hit a finish at the end. Kofi hit his kick, and then Antonio Cesaro deadlifted him up. But instead of doing the throw, he turned it into his pile driver, his face-first pile driver. For
neutralizer.
Neutralizer. And... very good finish, and a pretty fun match. Antonio Cesaro came off as a pretty big deal here in this match.
Yeah, he got a nice win, and they did a. You know what's really cool is whenever he does that, and then people are going to get into that at some point, and then they're probably going to turn him babyface. Keeps doing, you know, that bolo like thing when the guys fly into it. You know, that always seems
the
to
form, be yeah.
Pretty cool spot, and
well, he times it perfectly every time.
Yeah, well, I think it's two, you know, but...
I mean, the point that they put it into the match.
Oh, yeah.
It's always a very creative spot.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I thought the finish was actually, I really liked the finish here. And it did make Cesaro look good. And, he pinned Kofi.
And then we had the lie detector test. What a main event. Punk came out. Heyman was there. Some dude with a lie detector. Miz just being ridiculously obnoxious. Punk just buried him 6 feet under. And they took forever to ask the base questions. And then they went to the question of, do you think you're going to beat Ryback at the pay-per-view? And Punk said yes, and the machine indicated that he was lying. And Punk said, it's an opinion! Which was a pretty good point. And then they.
Well, they said that it. The way that the guy explained it was that it wasn't confirmed that it was a lie, but you saw that big thing spike up. And I thought that that's what it meant, but it doesn't count because Punk can't wrestle Ryback.
That's right.
Paul. Paul's not wrestling Ryback.
So then they asked the big question: were you in cahoots with Brad Maddox and the Shield? And there was the long, 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 long drawn-out pause, and he was about to answer when suddenly the Shield hit the ring, and they destroyed Miz, they destroyed the table, Daniel Bryan and Kane ran out, they got destroyed as well. Finally, Ryback came down and ran everybody off, and CM Punk got on the turnbuckle and started cheering and celebrating and that sort of deal, and jumps off the turnbuckle, and there's Ryback, who hoists him up, hits him with a shell shock, pulls out a table, ladder, and chair, hits him in the gut so hard with the ladder, hits him in the back so hard with the chair, and then power bombs him through the table. And Ryback was super over on this show this segment.
Well, that's because they kept him off for the whole show.
Yeah, they kept him off the whole show, and then he absolutely destroyed everybody, and... all I think is that, I said this on many shows before, but when the Hell in a Cell buy rate came in, the very first thing Vince should have done is just say, no more losses for this guy. Have him be the sole survivor on the Survivor Series team. Move him into a feud with a dude he can destroy. Instead, it's going to be three losses in a row for this guy, and they've got to go back to having him destroy people and beat people from this point forward. Whatever they're going to do down the line is fine, but this guy's got to start beating people again because they have something here.
He will, but not on this pay-per-view.
No, but they've got something here, but they can still easily screw this up.
Oh, yeah.
The guy still needs all the help he can get.
No, he just needs to be he needs to be positioned and booked carefully, and don't do stupid stuff with him. You know, that's all. But I think that they are. I think because he's going to get revenge on those guys. Although, or maybe I don't know. We'll see what they do. They could put Miz also in that match with Daniel Bryan and Kane.
I can't wait for that.
Because I think that they seem to be more focused on Miz than Orton. Orton's sort of, I don't know what the deal is with Orton. It's like they push him, but I think they may go with Orton. I could see maybe if Wade Barrett wins the Intercontinental title, then maybe they go with Wade Barrett and Orton as a program, even though we've seen it a bunch of times already. Maybe. I don't know.
The thing with Orton could be that he had a lot of time off for the movie, then he came back, and then last week he was doing the thing with... was he overseas? Did he go to visit the troops?
Orton didn't go, no. Miz went. Miz and Ron Killings went.
Because he was off every single show last week.
Maybe he just had some time off.
It is very strange. All right, let's get into some news here. A lot of news on Ric Flair. Flair, of course, did the interview talking about how he doesn't think he'll ever wrestle again as a result of no longer being with TNA, which eliminates that promotion. And after what happened to Jerry Lawler, he doesn't think WWE is going to allow him to be in the ring.
Well, they weren't going to let him wrestle anyway, just because WWE was never going to let him overdo that. You know, that stipulation from WrestleMania. I mean, that was it for WWE. But I do think that what they won't allow is, and they would have if it wasn't for the thing with Lawler, would be Flair to come in and you know, get beat up and, you know, whatever, you know, doing angles like that. I think that after what happened with Lawler and what happened with Ricky Steamboat, that it's probably going to be hands off for guys of that age. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure of that.
Unless your name is Vince McMahon.
Yeah, Vince is older than Rick, but you know, Vince is going to do what he's going to do. You know what I mean? No one's going to tell Vince what not to do, but Vince will tell other people what not to do, and he will make decisions. So it's you know, that is true. Yeah, that's true.
Flair also made TMZ tonight, his fourth divorce.
Not quite divorced yet, but...
this relationship went poorly due to his wife claiming that he had numerous illicit affairs with other women during their marriage.
Yeah, I know.
And she's claiming he owes her a lot of money. Hasn't paid her a cent.
Since October, right? Or
no, earlier.
Maybe July?
Yeah, he owed her... he was going to give her a payment to cover the legal costs. And $4,000 a month, which she hasn't seen a penny of. And
that takes back to July.
Yeah. So, yeah, she's seen nothing, she claims.
But she claims that he's making $1 million a year in her court papers.
I find that hard to believe, but I suppose it's possible.
Where?
Well, I mean, he's got an endorsement here and there.
Yeah. I'll tell you, this isn't going to help any, because I know that, I don't know what the status is of that the energy drink, but I hear nothing about that energy drink thing. I mean, I heard about it at one point for a little while, then I've heard nothing since. And I know that, like, when he got his last deal, I mean, he was told pretty much that, you know, no more bad publicity. And if the deal's still going on, I'm not saying that this is going to kill it, but it's exactly what they don't want.
It wouldn't help.
No, I mean, like, he's been told, man, you know, no more, you know, because you know, it's like a lot of it's been like, you know, she got the drunk driving arrest, and then this thing where she, you know, she attacked him that time, actually I think twice, and it was always like, well, it wasn't me, it was her, and they're just like, no more bad publicity, no more. But this one, they're not paying, you know, it's another bad publicity, and it's like, I think, you know, what are you going to do? I know that when he left TNA, it was because of the Coke thing, because he was making so much with the Coke deal that he could afford to leave TNA. And he didn't need to do wrestling anymore, but he wanted to go back to WWE just because that's what he wanted to do. But I just don't know. I suppose she would know the details of that. I just thought that was really weird, you know, $1 million a year. And if he's making $1 million a year, god damn. I mean, I suppose he should, probably should pay her, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that, you know, he's probably going to have... I don't know what's going to happen with the guy. I mean, what can you say about Rick? I mean, it's just one of those things. You know, you see it, and it was like, I'm not even surprised, and it's just like, Jesus Christ. You know, if he's not making any money, I can see it. You know, I mean, if you're not making any money, it's pretty hard to pay spousal support and all that. And I don't know what the status is of the Coke thing. But if he doesn't have the Coke thing, I don't see where he's making any money. I mean, any significant money. He's not working anywhere else. He's not doing movies. You don't see him on television shows. He's not doing any pro wrestling. But if he's got that and it's that strong of an endorsement deal, then my God, he certainly should be paying her what he owes her. I mean, as much as I'm sure he doesn't want to, you know, but when you make a legal agreement, you know, I mean, again, they told him to stay, you know, don't make the papers. So, you know, that type of stuff. I mean, that's what they don't want, but it's Rick. What can I say?
Let's get a New Japan Eye pay-per-view report.
The show, you know, it was nowhere near the level of the other shows. It was still a good show. The crowd was one of the first thing I noticed watching it, you know, having been to Japan in December many, many times in the past, is I saw in the arena all these people in their coats. And I was like, uh-oh, it's a cold arena. And cold arena, generally speaking, in Japan means cold responses. And it pretty much was cold responses. The other thing is being the tag team tournament, you didn't have the junior heavyweight stuff for the most part, although Kushida, you know, was in semi-main event. So, I mean, there were junior heavyweight guys up and down the show, but like Devitt wasn't there and no Low Key, no Alex Shelley, those type of guys. So you didn't have that quality of the match. I mean, there was really no great matches. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, it's like, it's a nice show to watch from start to finish, but it really didn't feel like a pay-per-view. It felt like, it just kind of felt like a show that, you know, it was the finals of the tag team tournament and it was to set up the tag team championship match, which is, you know, whatever it is, fifth, sixth from the top at the Tokyo Dome, not even the main event. So anyway, the opener was Yuji Nagata, Masaaki Mochizuki, Ryusuke Taguchi, and Bushi against Minoru Suzuki, Taka Michinoku, Taichi, and Kengo Mishimo, and Taichi jabbed a chair at Bushi and pinned him. But the big thing was they did some stuff for Suzuki and Nagata, who are going to do, and Yuji Nagata are going to do a singles match at the Tokyo Dome. And, Yuji Nagata, Suzuki ripped up a Yuji Nagata t-shirt, and Yuji Nagata got mad and got the big eyes and things like that. That wasn't too bad. Then, in a match that was pretty darn bad, Yoshihashi and Jado beat Diamante Azul and Rush. The crowd wasn't into it, and Yoshihashi and Jado really, you know, Yoshihashi worked in Mexico for I don't know, a year or two. I mean, he had a long run in Mexico, and Jado has been working with luchadors for 20 years, but they didn't click at all. It was almost like you're watching these guys that have never worked with luchadors working with luchadors, and it was just a style clash match. But so that wasn't good. Then we had the Japanese team won. Then in the semifinals, the two semifinals, Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. beat Togi Makabe and Wataru Inoue. When Davey Boy Smith pinned Inoue after the killer bomb Inoue did a lot of selling. He was pretty good here. Lance Archer is he's doing the real big guy stuff where you don't sell much in the beginning. You start selling a little bit in the end and stuff. He's kind of figured out how to work to get over in Japan. He's doing pretty well. And Davey Boy Smith is a lot better here, I think, just because he's got the confidence that he's kind of over a little bit. They put the belts on him and everything. So they're not a great team. I mean, they're trying to build them up to be that big, powerful foreign team like, you know, many of the legendary teams of the past. They're not quite there at that level, but for right now, they're all right. They're better than you would think. And then the other semifinal, Hirooki Goto and Carl Anderson beats Toshi Kojima and Hiroyoshi Tenzan. That was a good match. Toru Yano, Takashi Iizuka against Manabu Nakanishi and Strongman ended up turning into an 8-man tag. It was a DQ when Yujiro and Masato Tanaka ran in, and then so they ended up teaming with Yano and Iizuka. Nakanishi and Strongman ended up teaming with MVP and Shelton Benjamin. And that was a crappy match with another DQ when Iizuka used the iron fingers and shoved the ref and hit Nakanishi with the iron fingers. So, yeah, that was really pretty bad. Nakanishi just can't move anymore. I mean, he's so slow. It's kind of sad to watch, really. The big thing, not the big thing here, but they at the end of the match, the TV announcer, Nogami, Yano and Iizuka always beat him up, and at the beginning of the match, they tore off his dress shirt, then they tore off his undershirt. So he was out there, and they handcuffed him with these, I don't know if they were handcuffs, you know, I guess they were handcuffs. They handcuffed his hands behind his back, and so he ends up, he's broadcasting this match, sitting at ringside with no shirt on, and his hands handcuffed behind him, and he's doing play-by-play. I mean, it's like bizarre.
It's professional.
So anyway, after the match, they grab him again. By this point, he doesn't have the handcuffs on anymore, I don't think. They throw him in the ring, and they're about to kill him when Nakanishi covers him. So they start throwing chair shots at Nakanishi, and it ends up with MVP, Nakanishi, and Nogami, the TV announcer, all kind of like helping each other to the back. So that was that. Then Kazushi Sakuraba and Katsuyori Shibata beat Shinsuke Nakamura and Tomohiro Ishii. That was a great match. For what it was, I mean, short match. Shibata is another one. It's like his gimmick is that he's a shooter, so he doesn't sell at all. You know, hard. You know what I mean? But when, like, Ishii really worked well with. I mean, they both did, but Ishii was in a lot, and the Ishii Shibata stuff was really good because Ishii would be doing all these things, and Shibata would just like no sell them. But then when he would finally like get a pro wrestling move on Shibata, the place just went unglued that Shibata finally sold something. I mean, the way the psychology was actually in this match, it's like if you watch it with the idea of pro wrestling, you would go, oh, my God, that, Suzuki used to do this too. It's like this idea that, oh, my God, this shooter's being unprofessional. But that's the exact thing that you're trying to get that's the mentality of, you have with the Japanese audience to make them heels, you know, they're not cooperating. It looks like it's complete lack of cooperation, but in actuality, it's total cooperation. It's just the way that they're working the match, you know, and it fits, it works. It was good on this card. And you know, really good match. Then, they had a big pull apart with, Nakamura and, Sakuraba and everything like that. Not so much Nakamura and Sakuraba. Actually, Sakuraba tried to shake hands with Nakamura, and Nakamura walked out, but it was Makabe came out with his chain, and him and Shibata were brawling, and they did a pull apart as well. So the whole segment was really good. Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida against Kazuchika Okada in Ghetto, and Kushida looked really good in this match. Did a lot of cool stuff. Obviously, the finish was going to almost have to be Okada beating Kushida, which in fact it was with the Rainmaker. And you know, the stuff when Tanahashi and Okada was in was very good. They kind of gave you a taste of the Tokyo Dome without giving it all away, so to speak. So I thought, like, for what it was, you know, it's like 3.5-star match. You know, it wasn't a blowaway. It wasn't, you know, but good. And then, the main event was Archer and Smith against Godo and Anderson. Just basic logical booking. Godo and Anderson win the tournament. So they get the title shot on Archer and Smith. Archer and Smith, as the tag team champions, are put over. They're not made out to be jokes or anything, or they're made out, you know, they go right to the finals and then lose in the finals. So they're strong as tag champs, but the other guys beat them, so they deserve a championship match at the Tokyo Dome. So it's, you know, just logical stuff. No match is really long. This was a good match. You know, I mean, like I said, it was, I wouldn't say, like, go see the replay, which I would have said of the other two shows. Tokyo Dome show, you know, we'll see how it all goes. But, yeah.
Couple of MMA news bits.
We got to talk about Noah. That's really the biggest news going on.
All right.
It's imploding. It's like we don't really know exactly what's going on. The story broke. I mean, it's definitely true. That Kenny Kobashi was fired, and I guess Kobashi did want to work some matches this year coming back. I mean, I don't know how much he could work. He supposedly was healing up okay and was going to be able to do some stuff, although, it was really sad watching him, you know, on his last comeback. I mean, he did some comebacks that were great, but not the last one. But anyway, so he was fired, and now a lot of the guys, Goshi Ozaki, Jun Akiyama, Atsushi Aoki, there may be a couple others, Kanemaru. I mean, it nobody really knows who's doing what, but they look like they're not going to sign their new contracts, and it's all like it's in the process of happening right now. It was a big story in Japan, real big story in Japan, but it's one of those things where nobody really knows what's going on, and they had a show tonight. And, you know, all the reporters were there trying to get questions answered, and everybody was trying to find Kobashi, and nobody could. But, I mean, it was said to me that this is probably the, you know, not necessarily the end of Noah, but certainly the end of Noah as any kind of a significant organization. I mean, they may limp along with that name with some of the guys. And this thing has been building. I mean, I know, like, a long time ago even, you know, I was kind of told that, you know, you had the Kobashi forces and the Ryu Nakata forces, and financially, that they just can't go. They just can't afford the salary structure. And Kobashi was probably the highest paid guy, and he can't work much. And I think that was probably part of it. But you know, that at the same time, you've got those guys that were there, and you know, Kobashi's a legend, And let's face it, he built the frickin' company, him and Misawa. You know, without them, there would be no company. So it's a real slap in the face to fire the guy. But, you know, I mean, that happened. I mean, that's when Japanese wrestling went down, I mean, that's what happened with a lot of the guys. I mean, even with Chono with New Japan, I don't know exactly what the details were, but they couldn't afford the salary anymore, and because they just weren't taking in enough money. And it's the same, you know. It's the same thing here. So, this is going to end up being, I think that, you know, in the next week or so, we're going to hear a lot more details as to what's going on. But, and where these guys will wind up, I don't know. They'll be freelancers. Will they end up working for, you know, New Japan big shows? Will they work for All Japan? I mean, All Japan doesn't have a lot of money either. It's bad, bad, you know. The whole situation in Japan, it's bad. I mean, you know, just Sakuraba had to give up his, you know, gym and just everything, the whole economy there. I mean, when it comes to pro wrestling, it's just falling apart.
Dominic Cruz, when all is said and done, probably going to be out 2 years after needing another ACL surgery. His body rejected the cadaver that was put in to his knee.
That
and
really sucks. This really sucks for him.
I don't want to say he'll never be the same, but the chances of being the same are, I think, low.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, the other guys like that is Mo. I mean, Mo had all those surgeries, and he's, mm-hmm. he's fighting, you know, and they announced the fight. Well, I don't know, it hasn't been announced, but it looks like Mo's fighting January 17th. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's another thing, you know, we got the TV times for the new year. It's, looks like Ultimate Fighter is going to be Tuesday at 9. Bellator is going to be Thursdays at 10, right after Impact, which we figured all along, but it's, and it's not been, neither of these are officially announced, but that's what it's looking like right now. I mean, the UFC magazine listed this time, so I think that's probably, then it's probably the real deal. And, you know, Bellator has booked arenas for the 10th and the 17th. So I think that pretty much tells you, you know, for sure that it's Thursday night, and obviously it's going to be right after, it's going after Impact. So there you go. But I mean, as far as the Cruz thing, you know, God, I feel bad for him. He was so talented, really, really nice guy. And, you know, I thought he was going to be one of the hardest to beat guys just because of his style. I mean, not always the most entertaining, but sometimes, you know, with the right opponent, he was. And I, you know, him and Barao was, you know, I mean, it wasn't like a big money fight or nothing like that, but it was a, if you're a fan, you know what I mean, a fan of seeing like number one against number two, I mean, that's a real good fight to have, and we're not going to get it for a long time, and when we do, he'll be out for 2 years, and ring rust is a real deal. But yeah, that's 2 years out. I mean, you know, even if he comes back, I mean, 2 years out of the prime of your career losing, man, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, a lot of people lose the time with a knee surgery or something like that, but 2 years, you know, damn, I feel really bad for the guy.
It's also really bad given the style that he utilized. Very quick style, a lot of movement, and 2 years off with numerous knee surgeries. It's, you know, GSP came back and appeared to be, you know, good as new, but he had a style that relied on some quickness, but not like Dominic Cruz relied on quickness. So we'll see, but it sucks.
We're not going to see for a long time.
Yeah. Well, they are saying that this surgery, he could end up out 6 to 9 months, which would be like a best case scenario. But
I heard 6 to 9 was before he had the meeting today. I think that after the meeting today, it was 12 when he saw the doctor, because it was late afternoon when I heard from UFC, and they were saying 12.
Yeah.
So 6 to 9 was what they were saying a couple, you know, like, before he had his doctor's appointment today. I mean, he may not be able, you know, you got to remember, I mean, like it could be like 9 months, you know, it's going to be, you know, I mean, even, you know, even if it is like 10 months and not 12, still a long, long time. And, you know, Henan Barao is going to be, for all intents and purposes, Henan Barao is the champion. You know, I mean, they could, however semantically they want to do it, there's some people who are saying they should just make that the regular championship. To me, it's if I had known it was going to be, if it's going to be 2 years, you probably should make it the real championship. But now that we're being told now it's 1 year, I think you can go with the interim because it's only a year, and you know, have Barao defend it twice, and then go with Barao and Cruz. I mean, it's a semantic thing. You can just say Barao, you know. You could do that, but I think that I don't know if they'll want to strip Cruz of the title after all this, because he is coming back in a year, and that's kind of what the interim title is for. So, but yeah, you know, the thing is you're right with the style and everything. I mean, he may, you know, it'd be too bad. I mean, because he was a very talented fighter, and his style does depend a lot on speed.
Yeah, you've got an article on MMAfighting.com on this, talking about possibilities of some matches at UFC on Fox 5 that could play into this interim.
Yeah, there's the match this coming Saturday with Mike Easton and Rafael Assunção, which will be on FX, now becomes somewhat important because the winner of that could be in line. The Brad Pickett fight, who's Brad fighting? I'm trying to remember now.
Let me find it.
What? I should know all this.
I was going to look for it.
But Brad Pickett's fighting on the 29th. so many fights. Hold on.
Let's have a race.
What? I'm going to have it.
Eddie Wineland.
Eddie Wineland.
I got it first.
Okay, you did. All right. So, yeah, the winner of that one could be in line, and Uriah Faber is probably going to end up fighting Ivan Menjivar in February. Maybe. That's not official or anything. It's been batted around. So, but Faber's not going to get a shot anytime soon. You know, he's going to need to win a bunch of fights before he gets another one. So, but those three, if Menjivar beats Faber, of course, Menjivar might go to the head of the class just for beating Faber. But those three guys, I mean, McDonald's going to get the first shot, though, if he's healthy. You know, and he's had his hand problems as well. But probably go with Barao and McDonald next. And then the winner of one of those two fights that this month, maybe as the winner, you know, facing the winner of that down the line. That's the deal with the division.
All right, everybody, we're going to wrap it up for today, but we got a lot of stuff coming up, including Nigel McGuinness is going to be on the show on Wednesday talking his new documentary, which hopefully Dave and I will have seen by then. So if you have questions for Nigel, you can always post those on the board. I'll make a thread for those, and should be a good time. Got new Figure Four, new Observer, new radio shows, tons of stuff coming up, so check out the front page for more, and we shall talk to you again after a while.